Yeah, that's how it all starts out. My kind of wonderful. That's what you are. You're my moon, my stars, my everything. That's how it starts. Does it end that way, though? Mort Fertel is the creator of Marriage Fitness. It's an alternative to counseling and a world authority on the psychology of relationships. He's got an international reputation for saving marriages. And he has been featured on ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, Fox, you name it. He's been there, and his Marriage Fitness program is endorsed even by the marriage counselors he says you don't need to go to. And he's on the other end of our AT&T line this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Where did you get the special insight into figuring all this out? Because the last I looked, the divorce rate in the United States was 50% and even higher for second and third marriages.
Isn't that amazing? Second marriage is about 70%. Third marriage is close to 80%.
Why don't we get better at it? Why does the number go up?
That's a great question. Because the key to succeeding in marriage is not finding the right person. It's learning to love the person you found. And if you haven't learned the skills necessary to succeed in marriage, then it doesn't matter who you're married to, you'll just keep failing. And the fact that you failed once illustrates or demonstrates that a person hasn't really acquired the skills of succeeding in marriage, and so they're just taking that failed skill rate, so to speak, to the next marriage.
What do you mean, skills, Mort Fertel? Aren't you supposed to be swept off your feet? Isn't it supposed to be a fairy tale from day one and happily ever after?
Michael, you're watching too many movies. Right, that's what people think, but it's really not the case. You don't have to be lucky in love, and there's nothing natural or spontaneous about it. Love and succeeding in a relationship is a skill just like succeeding in anything else. Now, that might not be the case initially. Okay, initially there's chemistry, and falling in love is easy and it's natural and spontaneous. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to know anything. Any idiot can fall in love. But anybody who ever has fallen in love also knows that then this relationship takes a natural cycle, that initial experience fades, and then the two people are left on their own, really with a certain skill set that's going to enable them to maintain that connection or not.
7-year itch, do you believe that?
I think that it actually happens a lot faster.
Really?
7-year itch, I think, refers to the time period of which a lot of people end up getting divorced, but you realize that by the time that occurs, the problems have been around for years. So that cycle that I just referred to, where the love fades and now you have to really experience and engage in the labor of love, climbing into love, that I think happens after just a year or two.
A year or two?
Yeah.
The honeymoon's over.
Finished.
Why is it that when we stand there on that day, that wedding day, and we say, I promise to love, honor, and cherish, and sickness and health, good days and bad, richer or poorer, all the days of my life, the second those words come out, they are apparently no longer really meaningful or a real promise, whether it's in front of a judge or a priest, because of what we just talked about, the divorce rate being so high. Why is it that somebody drops their gun and runs when there is a tough time? And I'm not talking about abuse or, drugs or anything like that. I'm just talking about, everyone means well, don't they?
I think they do. There's a lot of reasons, I think, for that, a lot of answers to that question. I think one of them is that the values that we've come to really embrace in our consumer life end up infiltrating into our marital or relationship life. In other words, in our consumer life, we want what we want, when we want it, how we want it. And not only that, but we get it, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, in today's world, with a couple of clicks, and as long as you've got your credit card ready, which you don't actually have to have the money in the bank to use, you can have instant satisfaction. And we're not accustomed to really waiting for things or working for things. And we apply that same mentality very often to our relationships. So we treat it like a car. It's not working well. I'm not happy with it, so I'll get a new one. And it didn't used to be that way, if you think about it. I mean, it used to be if you had a $50 toaster, you would take it to the appliance store to get it repaired before you went and bought a new one.
Let me ask you this. If one spouse verbalizes to the other that, you know, you're not meeting my expectations, and I've been trying to tell you, I need you to do this, you're loving me the wrong way, you know, they talk about those love languages, you've probably read about that.
Sure.
And one of the spouse changes, or attempts to change, or at least shows a recognition of that. And the first spouse says, well, yeah, but you didn't do it on your own. I had to provoke it. I shouldn't have had to provoke it. You should have done it on your own. Isn't that like a vicious cycle just going around in a circle?
Well, I would challenge that first spouse you referred to and ask them, where did you get such a notion? Where did you get such a notion that you shouldn't have to tell him or her? Where does that come from? It's ridiculous. It makes absolutely no sense. If you have certain needs and certain interests in your marriage, it's your responsibility to communicate that to your spouse. And the fact that your spouse is responding to your needs, responding to your communication of your needs, doesn't make their efforts or what happens after then any less meaningful or valuable than if they, you know, somehow figured it out on their own. Now, that doesn't mean that if, you know, we shouldn't be trying to figure it out on our own. Sure, it's nice if I can be tuned in enough to my wife to really understand what she wants and needs, and I can be sensitive to her and take those initiatives. That's wonderful. I should be trying to do that. But she shouldn't necessarily have that expectation of me. She should have an expectation of herself that if she has certain desires or interests, she should find a meaningful, intelligent, dignified way of communicating that to me, and then I'm responsible for being responsive.
How does your system work, the marriage fitness system? You say that you don't need marriage counselors.
So there are a number of sort of principles and practices of the marriage fitness system. One of the most important ones is to temporarily put aside the problems and the issues and to not talk about them, which is the exact opposite of the traditional marriage counseling approach. Traditionally, in marriage counseling, you go in and they say, okay, what's wrong? And you start laying into each other and getting those problems out. And somehow we've been brainwashed to think that there's something actually productive or useful about it. But actually what happens is we take the fight that we were having at the kitchen table and we bring it into the office of the marriage counselor, and we just get deeper immersed in the negativity of our situation, and we create more bad will by going over those problems over and over again. And they never get resolved through conversation anyway. Marriages don't change because people talk. Marriages change because people change. It's changes in behavior that changes marriages. And so the first kind of step is to temporarily put aside those problems and issues, not talk about them, and begin to engage in some activity that actually has the chance of creating goodwill, not bad will.
We'll continue with Mort Fertel after this short break. It's Michael Patrick Shields all across Michigan. The bottom of my... Is your marriage toxic? Is your spouse toxic to you? Mort Fertel, you can find him at marriagemax.com, and he's got the marriage fitness system that is setting the world on its ear, a new way of looking at a very old problem that seems to be pervasive, at least in American society. He's a world authority on the psychology of relationships, and he's got a reputation for saving them. When I say, well, let me go back first to what you said just before the break, that, you know, that if you would focus on positive things and do positive things, and forget about all the disputes and the petty arguments and the slights and the stamp collecting of problems along the way, that maybe you can start to sort of remember who you were in the first place, why you loved that person in the first place, and why you got married in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, more than that, it's not just remembering sort of who you were and why you got married, but you just simply begin to create goodwill. You begin to create experiences that you can feel good about, instead of talking about topics that you feel bad about. And the more you do that, the more positive experiences a husband and wife have, the more connected they feel. And the more connected they feel, then the more those problems and issues, they kind of get dwarfed by the positive experiences. As one of my own students said, he said, Mort, my experience was that the problems don't actually get resolved. They just dissolve. And that's exactly the point, because the underlying problem in any broken marriage is the lack of connection between a husband and wife. That, at the core, is the problem. the things we end up talking about are symptoms of the lack of connection. And so when we're trying to, like, talk about and resolve the problems, the truth is we're just hacking at the leaves. If we would create a connection between us through positive relationship habits, then we'd be really striking at the root of the problem.
In your dealing with God knows how many people, because you've got all sorts of ways of reaching them, private telesessions, you have boot camps, teleboot camps, and even personal counseling as well. What is the common denominator you see with the modern American couple? And I'm not really talking about what is the common denominator, if anything, about why their marriages don't work?
Anyway, the common denominator, I really just referred to it. If they found me, that means they're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And if they're in trouble, what they all have in common is a lack of connection. That's it. And whatever problems they're experiencing, infidelity, separation, their spouse filed for divorce, emotional neglect, I mean, you name it, it's all stemming from that lack of connection. And the beautiful thing about it is, no matter how much water has gone under the bridge, no matter how many problems and issues and what type of problems and issues a person is facing, that connection can be reestablished. It's not a mystery. It's not luck. There really are principles and practices that if a person adheres to, it begins to rebuild that connection between a husband and wife. And by the way, it's interesting, that can happen even if the other spouse is not interested, even if they're not participating. There are unilateral actions that one person can take that begins to rebuild that marriage.
How in the world can that work?
Right. We have been brainwashed to think that it takes two to tango, that I need my husband or wife to improve the relationship. That is simply not true. And it's kind of wishful thinking in the sense that we don't want to feel responsible alone. We don't want to feel like we can do it unilaterally. We want to feel like they have to join me, and if they don't, then I'm off the hook. But it's false. It's not true. One person's efforts can begin to shift the momentum of the marriage. And very often, it's that one person's efforts that does begin to shift the momentum of the marriage that creates the motivation for the other spouse to then join in the process. Now, I still haven't yet answered your question, because your question was, how can that happen? Think about it. The state of a relationship, the quality of a relationship, what a relationship feels like to both people, is totally a function of how both people are contributing to that relationship. And so if I change the ways I'm interacting with you, if I change my patterns of behavior, then it's going to change the nature of the relationship, the experience the two of us have. If yesterday I was screaming and yelling at you, but today I'm killing you with kindness, there's going to be a change in the tone of the relationship. There's not as much of a change as if you participate also, no question about it. But maybe I have to first kill you with kindness a little bit. Maybe I first have to change my patterns of behavior in order to motivate you to change yours. But people tend to stand on ceremony. Well, why should I change if he's not going to change?
Mort Fertel says it's never too late, especially with his MarriageMax.com. All the best to you, sir. Good luck. It's MarriageMax.com.